Blog Talk Radio.
Hoffman from Political Gravity.
I believe John will be joining me tonight. So, John did give me the heads up on something. Yeah, John, I see you in the queue. I forgot, because I've been pretty busy today, that it's 6 years ago Michael Jackson died on June 25th, 2009 at the UCLA Medical Hospital. He actually died before he got there, but I'll pull John into the show. Hi, John.
How are you?
Lauren likes
Who's
doing
that?
That hee-hee thing.
Oh, yeah. Who's that?
It is kind of, I remember when the five-year mark passed for Michael Jackson's death, and it seemed like it flew by.
Oh, yeah.
His doctor's already served his 4 years for giving him the injection, but I think he got off in 2.5 years for good time. Conrad Murphy.
Ah, yes, Conrad. The things we do for money, the things we do for love. Although someone told me that he didn't get paid, that he was actually doing it gratis. It's possible. I know he was under contract with, I believe, AMG, the company that was...
I'm sure he got paid, but maybe not for all his work, because everything ended so abruptly.
Yeah, that's true. You know, maybe Michael was slipping him some, something under the, maybe Bubbles was handing him some bananas under the,
Well, I heard he was a pretty negligent doctor. He had women over there. He brought women over there to meet Michael Jackson. Like, he was kind of not very professional.
Right. I mean, I have to say this. If you're putting someone under, and maybe if you do this all the time, maybe it becomes casual. Maybe you take it for granted. But all I'm saying is, if I'm giving someone something that makes them unconscious, it's like the number one entertainment celebrity, not only of the world, but, maybe in history. I don't think I'm going to be, making some, cell phone calls, visiting some friends, maybe go online, check out some stuff. I'm going to make sure this guy's alive. I mean, I think you got other things you can do in your free time. To me, that just seems major, So to that degree, I guess if you do it all the time, maybe it becomes not such a big deal. I just think it was a big deal.
I agree. Well, I'm really not in the frame of mind tonight to do a special dedication to Michael Jackson, unfortunately, because, I'm not prepared. I was at the Minneapolis airport till 4 a.m. last night. I got back to, till 3, and then I got back to Duluth at 5, and I had to be to work at 8. So I'm just, maybe we can do a semi-tribute show on Sunday. So,
I don't know. I think we must dedicate our lives to the king of pop. No, I will say this, though. We can maybe give you a little bit of side amusement. We don't have to devote the whole episode. But yesterday we had a board meeting at the association where I live at, the condos. And the secretary, I should say the representative for our management company was there. And she had a cat they named Michael Jackson. And the cat was black and white. That's why they call it Michael Jackson, because of the song Black or White.
Please. Black and please.
And I guess Michael was kind of a bit of both, right? Or was trying to be. And I kid you not, this is a true story. The cat died the same day Michael Jackson died. And
whose cat? Oh, God. Whose cat was this?
Lady's name is Kim, and she's our representative for the management company for our condo. So her cat's Michael Jackson. He's black and white. And she gets calls, from her husband. And he said, did you know what happened? She said, Michael Jackson just died. He's like, how'd you know? He said, the cat. He says, no, Michael Jackson said, no, the cat's dead. Michael Jackson's dead. True story.
That's pretty good. Well, it's pretty interesting and kind of like symbolic.
Yes, and remember when Michael did his, he was doing those videos, which is kind of like world-breaking now when he did, I think he did Beat It, too, but I know he did Bad, or Black and White, and yeah, he did Who's Bad. And on that one, I'm pretty sure, is one of those, you know, back in the day, because video was just really coming out. MTV, like, I think it was around 1981-ish, maybe, and Michael really was blowing up around, you know, a couple of years after that. And so they had this premiere of Michael Jackson on TV at 8 o'clock. I mean, this was, like, groundbreaking. You didn't have an artist, like, take over, except maybe Elvis went on TV in the, when he made a comeback around 1969. So, you know, here we are watching this video, and then at the end of it, they do this kind of mini movie thing where he turns into a Black Panther, and the the Panther morphs back into Michael. He jumps on top of a car and he starts beating the crap out of the car. He's smashing windows. He's screaming.
This
he's
is
grabbing,
Beat It.
No, this is, the song Who's Bad? When they played
okay,
Bad.
Okay, yeah, I remember that part of the scene.
Right. Then they went to, like, commercial or something like that with Pepsi, and which was interesting because Michael never drank Pepsi, even though he was endorsing the product. He didn't like it or he didn't, you know, I guess the whole main thing is he didn't drink the stuff, so he refused to drink it, and so it was one of those things where really that destroyed his life, because doing the commercial for Pepsi, his hair had caught on fire with one of the pyrotechnics, and that's what caused him all those pain and injuries. He had lost hair, and he started, you know, had to cover it up with wigs, and started taking the pain medication. That's where he got addicted to the drugs. But the thing is, in this video, this cat, I think, is going out in the street, becomes him. And he jumps on top of a car. He's got a crowbar. He starts smashing the windows and screaming at the top and doing his whole, oh, yell. And he's grabbing his crotch and, you know, gyrating and all this stuff and acting like he's a wild animal. And I'm watching the video in my in-law's house, my mother-in-law from England, and they're just sitting there, and I'm sitting there going, this is... Like, did anyone scream this video? I mean, kids are watching this. He's grabbing his crotch and yelling and vandalizing the car. But he was Michael Jackson. You could get away with that.
He grabbed his crotch in the Super Bowl, so I don't think it's a shocker anymore. I mean, that was part of his trademark. It was just a move. You know, I don't see it as sexual. It was just one of his moves, but I don't know.
Maybe he was checking.
He could have picked a better move, I guess.
Well, you know, there's always the rumor that the family had his genitals removed so that way his voice would never change. He would stay high-pitched. That was always kind of what would you call
Give
it?
Give me
it's
a break.
It was not a cult. Urban legend. But kind of the whole thing about it, though, was, you know, Michael is always doing that. It's different at the Super Bowl where you got a long shot, you know, and he's kind of in action. But when you see it on a video and they're doing it in slow motion, it's zoomed in on it, you kind of go, like, what are you trying to prove, you know? Because kids idolize this guy, you know? It's kind of crazy. But... I guess the point of it, this being the anniversary of his death, is that he really was killed because of he was in debt.
You know, I know he was killed, but I'm not in a very, I guess, warm-hearted mood tonight. You know, but he was killed in the sense that the doctor was negligence, but he was also taking the wrong drug.
The main reason
our topic tonight is the NBA.
Oh, good. Well, we'll get to the NBA, but just to wrap this up, the situation he ran into was just he was majorly in debt, and even though he owned the Beatles catalog, he owed millions and millions of dollars, and they were going to close up shop, and, I mean, Neverland was for sale. He just couldn't keep up with the bills, and so he had to do this final tour to try to pay everyone off, and they were doing. They sent people to look at the rehearsals, and Michael was just tired and slow and just wasn't energetic and everything. And they were threatening to cancel the whole tour. And, you know, he was signed
who
up
was?
To
AMG or whatever they're called.
They were going to shut it down, right? Because they had spent all this money. And they were going to, you know, have him play in London and do, I think, it's like 20 shows or, you know, whatever it was. And the point is, that's how come he went to the doctor and said, I've got to, you know, I got to get some sleep because I'm just too tired and I need something to pump me up. So, you know, you're basically shutting down your body with drugs and then pumping it up, you know, with kind of like amphetamines to get going, just like kind of Elvis, you know, and basically that you're stopping your heart and starting it back up. And it was just too much. It just, you know, killed him basically.
You know what though, John? The This Is It video, there were a lot of scenes where he did pretty well and he looked pretty good. And I've heard...
Well, this is after he got to the doctor. That's what I'm saying is he looked brilliant. He looked fantastic in the This Is It video. Oh, yeah, he looked amazing. And that's what they saw. They were so excited. And they're like, oh, great, we're going to have this greatest tour. You know, this is the final triumphant tour. And it's like, yeah, but we're killing him in the process, you know. I mean, they really didn't understand what he was doing to himself.
Well, I know that part of that This Is It was promotion, so of course they're only going to show the best scenes. The fact of the matter is, you know, I think people have to realize that his time was up. You know, he had a lot of anxiety after that sexual abuse case in Central California. He loved raising his children, and that was really the only thing that made him happy were his kids. But he had a lot of emotional problems. He never got over the fact that Lisa Marie Presley left him. You know, he just had a lot of pain, and sometimes people can't get over it.
Oh yeah, no doubt about that. He was kind of left in his childhood escape world. Now, kind of segueing into the NBA draft, what is interesting is that you're seeing a lot of guys today become instant millionaires. You know, these first round picks are going to get some money, they're going to get some nice contracts. And here again, just like Michael, they may not necessarily be businessmen. They're young black men with a lot of talent that people are going to pay money to see. And they're going to get a lot of things thrown at them. And unfortunately, for the majority of these guys, not all of them, the majority of them, they're going to end up broke. You know, they're going to get a couple girlfriends, get them pregnant, get a couple more, you know, have child support, a couple lawsuits. They get an injury. And suddenly, about a month ago, I was driving, I was riding the bike, and I got on the bus, and a guy got on. An African-American gentleman, and he started talking to the bus driver how he used to play for the New York Knicks in the late 60s with the Walt Frazier and Willis Reed and Phil Jackson, who's now part owner or general manager for the Knicks. And but he said, yeah, he used to play on that team that, you know, that won a championship. And here he is, like, taking the bus, and, you know, I wouldn't say he's destitute, but definitely not rich by any means. You know, didn't have his own car. And a lot of these guys, you know, hopefully they'll be smart, but most of them won't. You know, they're going to get crazy with their money.
Yeah, I was trying to look up online the Minnesota Timberwolves. They landed the one, I think he was the best player in the NBA in college.
You're talking about Cam. Yeah. Right?
Karl Anthony Towns. He was the number one overall NBA draft pick. he was the see the teams that are the shittiest get the best players.
Yeah.
And let's see here. The Minnesota Timberwolves are hoping big man Carl Anthony Towns will live up to all the hype. Oh, crap. The Timberwolves selected the 6'11" freshman sensation out of Kentucky with number one overall pick in the 2015 draft on Thursday night at Barclays Center in New York. He averaged 10.3 points a game and 6.7 rebounds in 21.1 minutes per game. Well, I don't know. Wait. I don't know what they mean by 21.1 minutes per game. Are they just cutting out all?
He played about 20 minutes. And college games, I think, are about 30, if I'm not mistaken. I think they do two quarters of 15 minutes. It might be 20 minutes, so maybe it's a 40 minute. I know it's not as long as the NBA because the NBA has four quarters.
You know, I'm not an expert. I would have to say that my knowledge of sports has really decreased. I don't follow any sport anymore religiously, but I do want to tell you that I know Kevin Garnett came back to the Wolves in mid-season, and they did not improve.
Yeah, unfortunately, Kevin's time kind of came and gone. You know, he lives in Newport Beach out by Kobe, actually, which is surprised that they didn't get him. Boston Celtics actually got him for a couple years.
I wouldn't say his time. You know, he won a ring, John. He won with the Celtics.
Right.
And
it was
look at Brett Favre played till he was 40. I wouldn't say he's a total wash.
Oh, no. He still has skills. And trust me, I mean, if he went on the court with any of us, he would wipe us off. You know what I mean? When a guy loses his skills, basically we're talking about them maybe losing 3 or 4% of their ability. It's so competitive, you know, you lose. Like, example, there's a pitcher for the San Francisco Giants baseball team, Tim Lincecum. He used to throw 97, 98 miles an hour fastball. Now he throws about 90. Now, you still think 90 miles an hour that is fast. I mean, it's only 10%, but that's made him from the best pitcher in baseball. He won a couple Cy Youngs to he can barely make the team. In fact, they're thinking of, like, putting him in the bullpen and, you know, having him pitch, you know, once every couple of weeks.
How old is he now?
He's about 29-ish, right around there. He still has a lot of miles.
How come he's gone so downhill?
Well, he's a small guy. By sports standards. Like, pitchers, they want him to be 6'2 to 6'5. He's barely under 6 foot, you know, maybe 5'11 or so, about 160, 170. So if he was walking down the street, you wouldn't feel intimidated by him. You know, there's every other guy on the bus would be taller than him, but he had a gift to throw very hard, and he put all of his body into it. And basically, I think he kind of just burned out his arm a little bit. But by that, I mean, he still throws 90 miles an hour. You know, that's still 90%. But in sports, it's so competitive. If you lose just, you know, 2 or 3%, it changes your whole life, really. It's so competitive. So in regards to Kevin Garnett.
If he can jump up and catch, I guess a pitcher also has to jump up and catch balls that are coming his way, but I don't see the difference between 5'11 and 6'1, how big a difference that makes.
Well, it's kind of like it changes the angle. And by that, I mean, a lot of people see a guy walking with big arms, and they go, man, that guy must be able to throw the ball really hard. It's a little bit different throwing the ball. They say physically the most you could probably throw a ball is around 100, 110 miles an hour, and I'm talking about elite players. If you were to throw more than that, you're just going to – your arm would fall off, basically. You just physically, it's not built to do much more than that. Guys can lift weights and get bigger arms where they're strong and they can, you know, double or triple their strength. But as far as the velocity, you know how kind of like helicopters work? how they spin round and round, and it's the angle, and it's a formula. It's like width by height by velocity creates this, you know, an enormous torque. So what makes the pitcher throw faster isn't big arms. It's the way he stretches and snaps his whole body. The more your body turns, the more strength, the more leverage it has, I guess is what I should say. So he just has incredible leverage.
So when the guy was good, how good was he? Like, did he win a lot of games for them?
He won two Cy Young Awards, which are the best pitcher in baseball. He did that a couple of years, you know, in a row. He's won three different World Series with the Giants. So he's been at the top of the world. But that's how quick a demise can happen, you know. In a couple of years, they're talking about him being close, you know, to being washed up or having to change his game because he doesn't have his stuff. And for the normal person, you'd go, oh, my goodness, he throws 90. You know, if I threw 90 miles an hour, I'd be lining up to play for any team, you know. Give me a shot.
I guess my thing is I like that story. We should talk about the Golden State Warriors. I didn't even know they were a major league team. I never even heard of them until they won.
Oh, yeah. And coming from the Bay Area, you're talking, I think, what was it, about 30 years since they've won something, 30 or 40 years?
40. It's been 40,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
That
I'll look it up while you're talking. I'll look it up while you're talking.
Because, yeah, I was about maybe 10 or 12 when they won. I'm 56. Yeah, that would make about sense, 40 years. It's a lot of that is just I keep thinking like I'm 30 or 40, you know, because back then it was like, yeah, 20 years ago they won. But being 56, which is 40 years, I was probably about 16 years old. That's about right. And
I don't know.
What
can you tell me about, since you grew up in that area, why do they need the Sacramento Kings, the L.A. Lakers, the Golden State Warriors? Is there any other teams that I'm missing from California?
We got the L.A. Clippers, which used
to
be in San Diego.
Yeah, we have four teams.
And that's why they called them the Clippers, because it was the San Diego with all the ships down there. And then they moved it up to here, and they kept the name, which doesn't really, you know, make as much sense. But with Golden State, what's interesting, that team is put together by Jerry West, who is the logo of the NBA. Like, whenever you see the picture of that image of a guy dribbling the ball, they took an actual picture of Jerry West, and that's what that's from.
Who is Jerry West, I hate to say?
That's okay. Jerry West was one of the top guards of all time who played for the Lakers for years. And the only reason you don't know more about him is because for about seven or eight times, the Boston Celtics teams with Bill Russell beat the Lakers in Jerry West. And it was kind of like Jerry West versus the Celtics, kind of like LeBron. You know, Jerry was the best player, but the Celtics had the best team. So he always kept losing, like, in the seven-game series, like 4-3. And most of them were these heart-wrenching losses, you know. And Jerry would be all taped up with his hamstring hurt, a broken nose, you know, taped up, and scoring 40 or 50 points and his team would lose, you know, kind of like LeBron. And so he finally won one championship in 1971 with Wilt Chamberlain. And that Laker team won 33 games in a row, an NBA record that still stands. They also won 69 games that year, which was a record that held until Michael Jordan's team, Chicago Bulls, beat that record. But the point is, Jerry retired and became general manager of the Lakers, and all those Magic Johnson teams, and, you know, Kareem and all that stuff, that was Jerry West put that stuff together. Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant, again, Jerry West picked those players. And he left about 10 years ago, went to Memphis, built that team, and they go to the playoffs every year. And then about 4 years ago, he left and went to Golden State and made a, you know, a winner out of them. So you're really seeing Jerry West teams winning everywhere he goes.
Well, I did find some information. The Golden State Warriors are a pro basketball team out of Oakland. In 1962, they were originally, in 1946, they were the Philadelphia Warriors. They relocated to Oakland in 62 and were called the San Francisco Warriors. And in 1971, they changed their geographic moniker to Golden State, representing California. They have won four finals, but the last one, the third one that they won was 40 years ago until they won it now.
And it's a really wonderful team.
I like their patch. It's like a circle with the Golden State Bridge. I might order a T-shirt from them.
Now, did you get to see any of the games, or at least see a little bit of Steph Curry's playing ability?
No, but I did hear. I do a driving job every other week, and I listen to a long story on NPR about their history and how the people in the area really support them and how they were excited for the parade and how they came pretty much where it come from, nowhere behind team to become national champions.
Well, you know, it's kind of what was one of the highlights of the series was whenever the team would win, Steph Curry and his daughter would accompany him to the podium to answer questions, and she became kind of a little celebrity because she was funny and cute.
Read an article about that. Somebody was complaining. They said it was getting borderline annoying that she came every time.
You know, it was at certain times she would do stuff like that, like she just, you know, walk away from him and start playing with the curtains and dancing with the curtains. And, of course, the cameras, they knew to milk it, so they'd follow her instead of Steph. And sometimes he'd be talking, and she'd either grab the mic or, you know, play with his cap or his head or, you know, stuff that kids do when they're young. And most of the time it's cute. You know, there was a certain point where it might have gotten a little bit annoying. But, you know, I thought it was more entertaining than seeing LeBron and Dwayne Wade with their fake glasses that had no frames in them. Stuff like that, you know. It added a little color to the whole situation.
Yeah.
Was
the guy who brought his daughter every week to the press conference, was he the best player?
Well, yeah, he won the Most Valuable Player Award. It was interesting. He's not like a super big guy. He's about 6'3", but he looked smaller for some reason because he's not like a super big muscular guy. He's just very fit
like trim and with narrow arms.
Right, and obviously very strong. You know, don't get me wrong. You know, he could probably out bench press a lot of guys. Very, very tough. He had one game where LeBron James was going up for a rebound. Oh, no, Dwight Howard, who's 6'11", and, you know, Superman, they call him. And he snuck right inside of Dwight, jumped up and snatched a ball away from him. So he's a pretty strong guy. And
wow.
What was interesting is that he's just a crazy talent. You know, most guys – you know about the three-point play, like it's basically a long-distance shot where you get.
Yeah, I'm not that stupid.
Well, you know, they don't have to be stupid. It's just, you know, it's just all.
Yeah, it's out. It's like the three-point play is within a certain realm of the court, but it's on the outskirts, and it's 3 points because they shoot from far away.
Right, as compared to a normal two-point play. Well, most players, when you see them, if they're good shooters, they've got to kind of, they have a certain form, you know, they square up to it, they keep their hand position very tight. They shoot and they follow through with their hand, kind of goes in a straight motion. They line it up. It's almost like golf, you know, the way they line it up. Like everything's got to be precise. Usually you don't want to be twisting. You don't want to be turning to the side. You don't want to have any awkwardness to it. It's very, you know, it's kind of like a machine, just zhoom, zhoom. You get this form going. Steph Curry, if you watch highlights, if you have some free time on the internet, just look up his three-point shooting. He shoots it like he's throwing bananas into a garbage pail. I mean, he's just flipping it left and right. Does it look? Not, you know, usually a guy has to square it up. He puts his 2 feet together, and, you know, he takes it one bounce, and he's kind of this timing thing. Stuff is just like, you know, like you're just chucking, you know, garbage into, you know,
like
a
he's smooth
room.
As butter. He's so smooth that he could just throw it from any angle and it'll go in.
Any angle. Sometimes he's looking. Sometimes he's not looking. He's kind of, you know, sometimes he goes casting. Is he throwing? And I mean, so casual, and he makes it. I was told that we have it on video. I haven't seen it. That he took a guy out to the court and he made 77 3-point plays in a row, standing around shooting. Now I've heard of Kobe doing like 20 or 30 in a row, and I've heard of guys that do that kind of stuff, but the point is, he's crazy. I mean, because you think about it, normally when a guy's going to score up and shoot, you know, there's a timing. He's going to get the ball with both hands. He's going to take one bounce, set both feet, you know, square up his shoulders, get lined up, you know, like kind of like a golf thing, and then, you know, shoot in perfect form. This guy, you know, he gets the ball and just throws it up there. And so you don't know how to guard him. You know, at any point, any place, he can shoot the ball. He can just throw it up and make it. So, yeah, he's crazy. Crazy good.
Wow.
And it actually, what the Lakers, so the Los Angeles Lakers had the second choice. So Minnesota went with the 6'11 center from Kentucky, I believe. And then the Lakers had a choice for the number two guy, which is a 6'11 guy from Duke, Okafor. Now, Okafor, here's the funny thing. Town had the best team during the season. I think they won like 40 games in a row or something like that. They set a record for undefeated. But when they got into the playoffs, they lost. But Okafor's team was in the top four.
How are you pronouncing that name, the Okafors?
Oh, it's like O-K-A-F-O-R, I believe. Okafor. Okafor.
Okay.
And I think it's the first name is it Jaleel or it's a funky ethnic, you know, style. Like Jabeel Okafor or something like that. Well, his team won the championship, so Town, number one pick, had the best team, but Okafor won the whole thing. And the Lakers could have gotten him, but because they were so impressed with Steph Curry's play, instead of getting a big 6'11 center for the number one team in the country, it chose Jamarcus Russell, or DeMarcus Russell, who's a guard, 6'5 guard from Ohio State, I believe, because they felt the future of basketball is going to be these guards like Steph Curry running around, passing the ball, and shooting crazy shots.
By the way, we've
amazing.
Been talking 40 minutes so far. We have no callers tonight.
Oh, that's because we have to talk about Michael Jackson and bubbles.
I guess the most impressive time frame for me is in 1998, the Sacramento Kings, I think, went to the finals, and I like them a lot. And I also remember the heyday of Michael Jordan. He was an excellent player. I know that sounds pretty run-of-the-mill, but I remember those days. They were good. And, of course, the Lakers, I moved there in 87. I moved to L.A. in 87, and the Lakers won back-to-back, 87 and 88. So I think they might have won in 91. I can't remember now.
Well, that was so. An era. Jerry Buss bought the team. The team used to be owned by Jack Kent Cook, who owned, like, the Washington Redskins, and he owned the Lakers, and he sold it to Dr. Jerry Buss, and Jerry had kind of the golden touch. Everything, even when he made mistakes, it would turn out all right. He had a player named James Worthy, who had some potential but hadn't developed yet. And he was going to trade him. And he went to Dallas, and I think he wanted the guy. It escapes my name. But it was basically a very flashy player that was kind of hot at the time. And so they shook hands. He met with his other owner in a bar. And they sat down and talked about players. And this guy said, I want James Worthy. And Dr. Buss said, okay, we'll do it. He shook hands with it, and he went back and told Jerry West, who was his general manager. Jerry West said, if you trade James Worthy, I will quit. Like, this guy's going to be an all-star. So, and he actually, he said, I will just leave. So Dr. Buss had to call the owner of the Dallas franchise. I know I shook hands in a bar over this, but you got to let me out of this deal. You know, it's a gentleman's bet, but it's just like, I'll lose my general manager, you know, please let me out of it. And he did. He said, it's okay, it's cool. And as it turns out, James Worthy, I think, won 4 or 5 world championships with Magic Johnson, was part of Showtime. And that changed all of basketball history down here. It used to be a Dodger town, and then it became a Laker town. You know, in the last 30 years, it's been 30 years since the Dodgers have won a World Series, but the Lakers have won, about 10 championships that time.
Yeah, when I first moved to L.A. in the late 80s, Oral Hershiser played for the Dodgers, and they were good. And they've pretty much been waffling for the last 20 years.
That was the last time. And, you know, the Dodgers, speaking about the Bay Area, that year, in 88, the Dodgers beat the Oakland Athletics. And the most memorable thing was the first game.
What year was that?
1988. And Kurt Gibson was the star of the Dodgers as far as offensively, but he was hurt the first game and basically was almost like crippled. I mean, he could barely walk. He had one leg he could walk on. And the Dodgers were playing the A's, who had an incredibly great team, a much better team than them on paper. And before the game, Bob Costas, the sports announcer, he still does baseball and like football and things like that. He said before the game, this was the most lopsided mismatch. You know, the Oakland A's are going to just destroy the Dodgers. It's going to be just, you know, terrible for baseball ratings. Tommy Lasorda was the Dodgers manager, and he overheard it. And he said, could you say that again, you know, on TV? Just go ahead and just repeat that. And so he did, and Lasorda had him record what Costas says, and he took it to the clubhouse and he played it for his players. He said, do you hear what they're saying about us? They're saying this, that we're pathetic, that we're mismatched, that we're going to be embarrassed. And, you know, he got his whole team pumped up like as a challenge. So the first game, they're down 3-2 in the ninth. And Kurt Gibson hasn't played all game. And the Oakland Athletics bring in a reliever, Dennis Eckersley, the best pitcher in baseball, best reliever, won like 44 games he saved, and unhittable. And they bring up Kurt Gibson off the bench in the ninth inning in Dodger Stadium on one leg, and he's walking out there, and he looks horrendous, just terrible. He's swinging the pitches and missing them and fouling them off. Like, it just looked like a minor, like a high school baseball player. And with two strikes, Dennis Eckersley, for some reason, threw a pitch that Kurt Gibson was looking for, and it looked like he one-armed hit it like he's golfing, and he hits a home run and wins the game. And the whole place goes crazy. And the A's stood in the field for about 5 minutes after the game, just standing there in shock. And literally, it so sparked the Dodgers. Gibson never played another game in the series, but the Dodgers actually, I believe they swept them 4 games, if I'm not mistaken. Just psychologically, it was like David beating Goliath. They just slew the Giant. And that was at the time when they had Jose Canseco with the A's, and they had Mark McGuire, and they had these guys that were taking steroids. They had these big old guys, you know, juicing up. And they got creamed by the Dodgers with Oral Hershiser.
Are you serious?
I kid thee not.
My pastor liked Oral Hershiser. Oral Hershiser was a born-again Christian. Did you know that?
He was, and he actually was singing Amazing Grace on the mound, like in the last inning or so. He was just singing, you know, a song to God. And I think he went on the Tonight Show, and they asked him, what were you doing on the mound? You know, because we saw your mouth move, and he said, I was singing, I'm pretty sure it was Amazing Grace. And they actually had him sing for, Oral really isn't a singer, but he sang for about 10 seconds.
Was he a crappy singer?
I think part of it was
go
the nervousness.
Go tell it on the mountain, over the hills and everywhere. Go tell it on the mountain that Jesus Christ is Lord.
You sang better than him. He had a, you know, when people are nervous and the voice kind of wiggles a little bit.
Yeah, wavers.
I think it was Johnny Carson that interviewed him, if I'm not mistaken. And I could imagine, you know, being nervous on the spot, you're not expecting to sing, and, you know, here he's asking you to sing what you did in private to everyone. I'm sure he didn't practice singing or had voice lessons, so he probably caught him totally off guard. But it was a cool moment, you know, just to hear a person stand up for his faith. You know, I thought it was a really cool thing.
Yeah.
But I think what I was going to say about Steph Curry, I was talking to someone at church, and they said that he's a Pentecostal born-again Christian, as far as I understand. And then some of the guys on the team are, too. I have to check that out.
So what is your most inspirational moment ever in sports? Name your top one, two, or three. You don't have to pinpoint, like, maybe the most significant one.
Well, you know, for me, there are a lot. Some of them, surprisingly, are the ones where you lose because you remember them. There was a play called The Immaculate Reception. And that was by a Pittsburgh Steelers player called Franco Harris. And they were playing the Oakland Raiders. I guess we're stuck with Oakland today. And it was a game. Terry Bradshaw was the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback. The Raiders had Ken Stabler. They called Ken the Snake Stabler. This is when Al Davis.
I know
Davis,
who he was. That was during the time I watched the NFL religiously.
And remember, Al Davis was the owner of the Raiders, and everything, just win, baby, just win, commitment to excellence. And he would get a lot of guys that you would consider kind of just like vandals, kind of reckless, wild, crazy men, like Lyle Alzado and, you know, Ben Davidson, and just a whole bunch of characters. And so they were playing the Steelers as a tough game. It's one of those where no one could hardly score. It was something like 7-6. It's one of these cold, low-scoring games in Pittsburgh. And Terry Bradshaw was taking the team down in the fourth quarter, last chance. And they got down to a fourth and, like, 15 or something like that. They had to go a long distance. He goes back to pass. The Raiders are chasing him around. You know he's in trouble, and he kind of just throws a crazy pass, and the the Raiders had a couple of defensive backs. One of them was Jack Tatum, I believe. The last name was Tatum. They called him the Hitman. He would literally hit guys and knock them out. He hits their receiver and the ball at the same time, and the ball flies away, and we're thinking, game over. My brother's jumping off the couch. My dad is yelling. I'm pretty quiet, but my family, when their team wins, they go crazy. You know, Jay is jumping off the couch and running through the house screaming, "We won." And out of nowhere, suddenly we hear the fans screaming, and there's Franco Harris running down the field with the ball. Apparently, Tatum hit the ball. It goes 20 yards the other way, and it goes straight to Franco Harris, who picks it up and runs it for a touchdown. The problem is they didn't know if it was at that time it was illegal for a receiver to hit it to another player.
Why did they go the wrong way?
Well, because as the pass was coming to the receiver, Tatum was running full charge and creamed him. I mean, literally knocked him out. The guy was on the ground for like 5 minutes. So Tatum's velocity, you can kind of like volleyball, if you hit it to someone and then they come back and they spike it and it goes back the other way, that's kind of what happened. But in this case, instead of the ball falling down and just bouncing away and ending, it flew high in the air straight to Franco Harris. So Harris grabbed it like a pass and just ran the other way. So here's the dilemma was, they couldn't figure it out for sure, did it hit the receiver or the defender? If they hit the defender, it was a good play. If it hit the receiver, it was considered an illegal pass backwards. And the angle, if you watch the play, it's called the immaculate reception. It was so close, you literally couldn't tell with the camera angles. It was just, you could only imagine, like, did the guy get knocked out and then the ball bounced off of him, or did the defender hit it? The point being is, Harris scores a touchdown. This is like with like 10 or 20 seconds left in the game, and you have the whole stadium, Pittsburgh. These are wild, blue-collar, you know, steelworker people. 70-some thousand, I think 76,000 people surrounding the field, going into bedlam crazy, kind of like soccer fans, just crazy. And what they decided was the head referee looked at security, the police, and said, "Can you control this crowd?" And the head police security said, "No, we couldn't." He said, "Touchdown." like if they overturned that call, the place could have rioted and people might have gotten hurt or killed. So he decided, we're not even going to try. It's like, it's a touchdown. He called the immaculate reception. They actually have, if you go, and a guy on the field, they then took the ball and kicked the after point, and this guy caught it in the stands. Literally, this guy lives in Pittsburgh. He has a vault. He spent like, I think, $100,000, if I'm not mistaken, or more. He's got a special vault it's like a bank vault. It's like a sealed metal cell. And he takes the ball to different functions. Like people have parties in Pittsburgh. He will bring the ball. He literally has an armed guard or a couple with him. It's like no one's going to take that ball away from him.
Wow. That's a trip.
They even have a museum there, or kind of like a hall of fame. And they actually have the Franco Harris statue. They have the play playing, like three or four screens, showing it over and over, the different angles and all this stuff. And Franco, I believe, goes there occasionally, and they will actually play, they'll step through the whole play for people. I mean, literally, it's like a national religious experience over there.
Really?
Yes. But in terms of sports inspiration, there was a player from the Bay Area called Will Clark. He called him Will the Thrill. And he inspired me not by so much a specific thing, but by his failures. And by that I mean when he would strike out or make an out, he'd throw his bat down, you get the scowl on his face, and you could just see him talking to himself, walking all the way. The point is, he didn't accept failure casually. You know, like some guys making out, and it's like, oh, no big deal. Will lived with and died with the game. And you knew the next time he came up, he had this intense fire within him, this total cool calmness that when he was, you know, you knew he was going to hit the ball. He was going to get, even if he made it out, he was going to nail that thing. And he was one of the most inspirational people for me, just his intensity to life and his passion. And, you know, he's just exciting.
Lauren and Zach just got back from it's 3 in the morning here, and they're roaming the streets. Zach's
yes.
in a military. Come here, Zach. He has knee pads on, boots, a red earphones, what is that vest called, Zach?
Swiss Arm.
A Swiss Arm vest with multiple pockets around the sides.
You make it
sound
amazing. Hey,
wait.
Well, I'm glad you guys don't live in Ferguson.
I told them Zach's half Latino and Lauren's half black. I said the Duluth cops may stop you just because of your color this time of night. Here, smile, Zach.
Yeah.
Do it again, Zach. Okay, good. Okay, anyway, well, I like the story you said about the inspirational part that you liked him based on his failures, I believe.
Yeah. You know,
I'm sorry for the interruption to the show, but tonight is casual Friday because technically
yeah.
it's Friday in Minnesota.
I'm just glad your kids got home safe. That's, you know.
You know, I mean, it's terrible to say, you know, I shouldn't worry about. The thing is the Duluth cops will stop a middle-aged white woman for not using her blinker. So
right.
Lord knows what he'll do for two grown teenagers on the street at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Well,
maybe
so,
they're just
but anyway. Oh, by the way, I'm going to tell you a little. We have 3 minutes of the show left. I invited. Oh. Remember, I told you I invited Slick to fish in Lake Superior. Well,
right.
he tagged me in a fishing video last week on Facebook.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he tagged a lot of people, not just me. He was putting up one of his fishing videos. And I was one of the victims.
He wasn't feeling too good today. Actually, he went to the hospital because his one of his feet was swelling up a little excessively, getting a lot of fluid.
Was it from the heat?
No, he's kind of had ongoing problems with it, and so I think it also with medications. He takes, you know, 2 or 3 different medications. He's got pain, and you know. Shades of Michael Jackson, no, but it literally, I don't like, that's one reason why I'm kind of an anti-drug person, is because if you start taking things, you take something for your pain, and you take something for blood pressure, and you take something for this or that, and then you mix anything else with it. You know, like I think a friend said, oh, let's try this or that, it'll help the, you know, the fluid, it'll be a like a diuretic. And I think they gave him the wrong thing, and, you know, the mixture.
Are you saying he has diarrhea?
No, a diuretic, you know, like which helps your body shed water, basically. Like bodybuilders will take diuretics before a competition just to purge out an extra, you know, couple pounds of water. So I think he took something. The combination you know, made him feel like he was going to die. So... Fortunately, he wasn't dying, but he went to the hospital just to get it checked out. And thank goodness, so far so good. But that's one reason I really avoid drugs, is because when you start taking medications and you mix it with something, you just never know what the reaction is going to be.
Yeah. He doesn't have any chronic conditions, does he, like diabetes or anything?
No, but he does have pain, a lot of different, like in the knees and shoulder. He's had a couple surgeries on those.
Well, he's pretty active. I mean, it's
yes.
His pain can't be from inactivity.
No,
right?
He's a big guy, and gravity has a bigger, you know, pull on you. Like, you remember the basketball player Yao Ming, that 7'6" Chinese player? He had to stop playing basketball because his feet, he kept having, like, broken bones in his feet. You know, just all that height and weight just wasn't good for him structurally. And he actually had to quit playing basketball. He was a phenomenal player. It was actually kind of sad because he would do so well and they'd get, you know, halfway through the season or close to the playoffs, and then he'd get like a broken bone in his foot or his ankle or his toe, or, you know, and it was just chronic. It just kept happening two or three times towards the end of his career. He just finally had to quit. And so you'll find that out, you know, with people that are, you know, like 6'5", 6'10", like Shaquille O'Neal, those kind of people, you tend to run into all kinds of problems because of the frame. It's not really healthy for, you know, most people.
Wow. Remember Michael Hood, who was on our show Sunday night?
Yeah.
He sent me a direct message on Twitter. He said he had to leave the country. And then he said the NWO is here to take everyone out. Do you know what the NWO is?
No.
I don't know if he's joking about leaving the country. I'll have to see what I had sent him earlier in the week. This is a crazy day. So, it's 3 a.m. and I have some stuff to do. So, what are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts are that sports is a wonderful thing. It teaches us a lot of concepts about dedication, hard work, fundamentals, teamwork, loyalty, having faith. It also teaches us a lot of things about accepting life, you know, that you lose. Even if you're a winning team, you have to accept failure. You have to accept challenges. And for many people, you have to accept being a loser. And that's a really tough thing because there can only be one winner. So if you've got 20 teams or 30 teams, basically 90-95% of people have to accept not being the best. Can you be happy with that? Can you be content? Can you be content and still be motivated to be a better person? And I think sports is a very good outlet for that. So, you know, my final thought would be,
That's a pretty good conception.
It is, because it's helped me a lot in a lot of areas. And I know people, most example, sports is kind of a guy thing. You know, we can roll with that. Some girls are into sports, but, you know, half of those are into sports because their dad, you know, raised them that way, or because they're into a guy who watches sports and they want to be a part of that. There are a few gals that are tomboys, and they've always liked sports. But I'm just saying, like, example, you were running and into athletics at a young age. But most women, it's not really of interest to them. And the point is, they lose out on learning a lot of these fundamentals, because it applies to all areas of life, work, family.
Well, in the upper Midwest, John, women, you might find this surprising, but in the upper Midwest, women are more into sports.
I can believe that. And it might also be,
in
too,
fact, have you ever seen on the news the Minnesota hockey women players from UMD,
wow,
University of Minnesota Duluth? There, three to four of them went to the Olympics last time.
Well, you know, it
they're
also
just
might
as tough
be,
as the guys.
And it might not be the only reason, but I think you see a little more loyalty to sports in the Midwest and northern states because it's cold. Now, out here in California, people are going to the beach, they're going to clubs, they're running around, they're active, they're doing stuff. There's a million things to follow. You go Staples Center, Dodger Stadium, Universal, Disneyland, the beach. There's just no end to things you can do. When you live out in Nebraska like I did, or you go to Oklahoma, or you go to, you know, Wyoming or Arkansas, a lot of times the only thing in game in town is the college football team or the pro basketball team. And, I mean, that's it. When their team loses, it's like there's nothing else to do unless, you know, go out drinking. So there's more of an identity. Everyone sits down and watches the game and cheers, you know, where's your jersey? Out here, it's like people are very fickle. You know, they'll go from Lakers to Clippers to anything in a heartbeat. So I think it's a little different mentality.
Yeah. Well, I have one quick final thought. I've been in sports. I started running at 16 and I stopped at 31. And recently, now that I moved back to the Midwest, people are telling me to go back to running, start it up. But I'm going to be 55 this year, and I think I could start by jogging 1 or 2 miles. But my most inspirational sports figure between the ages of 15 and 20 was Fran Tarkenton. He was the quarterback for the Vikings, and they called him the Scrambler. And I loved him very much. He was he led the Vikings to 4 Super Bowls in about an 8-year period. And my second favorite sports star was Mary Decker. She ran for Oregon, and she went to the Olympics 3 times. And she was tripped by a barefoot runner named Zola Budd from South Africa.
Yeah.
And she missed 1 Olympics because Jimmy Carter boycotted the Moscow Games in 1980, so she kind of got screwed all the way around. So she got tripped in the 84 Olympics.
The only thing that was sad about her thing, because she really was kind of cheated, but the sad thing about it was that she crumbled into the ground and she couldn't get up, and probably this the frustration of training, you know, for 4 years and then seeing your dream get, you know, knocked down. Because, I mean, a lot of people get bumped on or stepped upon and those kind of things. It happens. But the point is, it hit her in such a way that she just couldn't get up and she was hurt. And I remember, I think her boyfriend had to run out there, pick her up and carry her, and she was crying like a baby and, you know, complaining about Zola. And it was kind of one of those things like, you know, man up. But on the other hand, I could understand. It was her whole dream. And she never really got the chance to win the gold that she was, you know, that worthy of. Like, in between all those years, she was the best runner. But with the Olympics, it's so unfair. You get that one shot every 4 years, and you only get a couple times in your life, and then, you know, over an 8-year period, you're pretty much done as an athlete. So I could understand her frustration.
Yeah, because I think about it. I think she was too young in 76. I don't really remember. In 80, she had to miss it. Then she had to wait 4 more years. She was in her late 20s. And then she still was doing the World Games and stuff. But it wasn't that much, you know. There wasn't much time to accomplish a lot more. You can't put your life on hold forever.
And Fran Tarkenton was an amazing quarterback, actually. If he had just won a couple of Super Bowls, everyone would know about him. It was only the fact that his teams lost. But he was phenomenal, one of the best scrambling quarterbacks ever. And no one could basically get a hold, their hand on him. He would always run away and then throw a pass. And I remember, I think it was one of the Rams players, I think Deacon Jones, like he basically – he said, you know, he was so good because he was that quarterback was running for his life. He knew we were going to kill him if we got a hold of him. True story.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm going to
–
I got to go. I really do. And I'll play the game of life on my way out. It's already locked into – it's embedded in our episode, in our studio page, so you're not going to hear any background noise. So we're going to end the show with that song, Out of Convenience, because I have it loaded. Have a great night, and I thought it was a pretty good sports show tonight, okay? And we'll talk soon. See you Sunday night. Bye-bye. Good night. Good night.
Bye-bye.
That's the game of life. That's the game of love.